Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's the first ever securities fraud case against a U.S. state, and it's over.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The government's financial regulator, the Securities and Exchange Commission, says it has settled a case against New Jersey. You heard that right. It's not a case against a bank or a mutual fund. It is the first time a state has been charged with securities fraud. We're joined live by Marketplace's Gregory Warner in Philadelphia. Hi, Gregory.
Good morning.
How does a state commit securities fraud?
Well, it starts with the state's two largest pension funds, the teacher's pension and the public employee's pension. And during the period we're talking about, which is 2001 to 2006, New Jersey paid only a third of the contribution that state law required. But they were always promising to fully fund those plans in the future. And that promise is really where this trouble starts, because the SEC says state officials had abandoned that promise. Meanwhile, they were asking, or New Jersey was asking investors to buy its state bonds, raising over $26 billion. And you combine those two things, that's the fraud. The SEC says the state sold bonds without telling investors that they had this pension debt they weren't planning to settle up.
Uh-huh. And what are the consequences for the state?
Well, New Jersey has settled the case, as you said. So state officials are saying, no harm here. Bond investors have been paid. The state's bond rating hasn't gone down. But the SEC is conducting investigations into other states. Lots of states have taken New Jersey's exact strategy, avoid financial disaster by raising money with municipal bonds. And demand for these municipal bonds is very, very high these days because they're seen as safe.
Mm-hmm. So this does not end with New Jersey. The SEC has got other states in its sights?
Well, Bill, as a sign of the SEC's seriousness on this, as of January, they have a new unit, the Municipal Securities and Public Pension Unit. And that's not just a title. You got a unit, you got desks, you have staff. You need something to do. You need cases to solve, right?
Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Thanks, Gregory.
Thank you, Bill.
Now, let's hear about a state that's doing well. Virginia's governor is expected to announce today his state ended its fiscal year with an extra $400 million. That's almost twice the earlier estimate. What's Virginia got going that most other states don't? Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Virginia is one of about 10 states that ended the budget year in the black. Scott Patterson with the National Association of State Budget Officers says many states are beginning to see better-than-expected tax collections.
The problem is we're still looking at state budgets that are in a lot of pain because they're not back to where they were pre-recession.
Virginia got some help from lots of federal government spending in the state, especially for the military. It also aggressively cut spending for schools, health care and transportation, and deferred payments to the state employee pension plan. Patterson says it's going to take a while for most states to recover.
Because of cuts and other things they've had to do or avoidance of dealing with certain things like pensions, they're now going to have to deal with those as times get better.
Virginia's governor will use the windfall to restore some of the cuts in education and roads. But some state lawmakers want to keep the money in case things get rough again. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Stocks in Europe have turned slightly higher. This morning, the parent company of Sears and Kmart said it lost $39 million in the last 3 months, but That's less than half what it lost a year ago. Over at the office supply store Staples, sales were flat, but profits were up 40%. Shares were solidly higher in Asia after a small lift yesterday on Wall Street. That's the street where the Dow Industrials rose 9 points to 10,415.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Yellow Book 360, offering a spectrum of marketing tools for small businesses designed to go beyond yellow. More at yellowbook360.com. And by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at vanguard.com.
Oyster harvesting is still banned in most of the waters off Louisiana, thanks to the BP oil leak. What's bad news in Louisiana might be good news in Maryland. Reporter Kathy Ducham tells us about the rise of aquaculture in Chesapeake Bay.
Many wannabe oyster farmers already have a relationship with the mollusk. Take this guy, who calls himself Johnny Oysterseed.
Yep, this is the oyster nursery. So this is one way that we get oysters started in an aquaculture sense.
Johnny Oysterseed, a.k.a. John Farrington, grows baby oysters in this supersized jacuzzi next to a creek that feeds Chesapeake Bay. His customers are conservation types who use the bivalves to filter pollution out of the water. Soon, Farrington hopes to grow oysters for food and sell them to restaurants and packing houses.
If we, develop an industry around aquaculture, we'd have millions of bushels of harvest. I think the potential is really that big.
The state of Maryland is getting ready to lease 600,000 acres of Chesapeake Bay bottom to people like Farrington. It's part of a plan to rebuild an oyster population that is 1% what it was 100 years ago. The strategy, encourage aquaculture and discourage the harvest of wild oysters. But oyster farming is not for the faint of heart.
It's hard work and the drudgery and the heat and the sun. And in the winter, it's the cold and the ice and the westerly winds.
Kevin McLaren runs the Chop Tank Oyster Company. He grows 8 million oysters in cages that float in the mild brine of the Chesapeake Bay. McLaren says selling oysters is the toughest part of the business.
We go up into Philadelphia, up into D.C., we do shucking events, you know, anything that's related to chefs and restaurants.
McLaren says he's not afraid of new competition, and Johnny Oysterseed is not afraid of hard work. He says he'll camp on the doorstep of state offices on September 7th to be the first in line to apply for an oyster lease. In St. Leonard, Maryland, I'm Kathy Ducham from Marketplace.
And finally, you can call them men's shapewear, call them compression undershirts. They're basically man girdles, and according to the Washington Post, they are all the rage. These stretchy undershirts fit like a wetsuit and help contain the love handles and beer bellies and other jiggly parts. The Post article points out this trend is not really new. Men have been buying garments to make them look tough since the days of armor. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I hope you'll download our Midday Update podcast and stay in touch with the business and economic news that way. Tweeting at Bill Radke Radio, and in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ, and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.